Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
Be a good basketball coach. No matter how many years you got, be a good basketball coach.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Jimmy Elgas, head coach at Henderson State University. Coach Elgas has built a wealth of experience through assistant coaching stops at Illinois State, Lincoln College, Southwest Texas, Kansas State, Utah, and Evansville before earning the opportunity to lead the Henderson State program. His journey has given him a unique perspective on leadership, personal growth, and building a successful culture. In this episode, we discuss how coaches can continue developing themselves to better serve their teams in today's landscape, the key factors he believes young coaches should consider before taking a head coaching position, and the core values that drive his program and shape the expectations he has for both players and staff.
Welcome, everybody, another episode of your favorite, and thank you for tuning in, the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. We're fortunate to chat with the head coach, Henderson State University, Coach Jimmy Elgas. Coach Elgas, welcome to the podcast.
Fellas, how we doing? Good to see you guys.
Oh, yeah, you too, man. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. I know how there's a lot of different people that you guys could have on there. So for you guys to reach out and to get me on there, Coach Major, Coach Caputo, means a lot for sure. Thank you guys very much.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I was saying before we hopped on, but like I'll put it more into light. You could tell who and the type of people are before they hop on, just with the conversations. And then like with you, you could just feel a different type of excitement, I guess is the word. Like you could tell you're energetic just to talk about hoops, to talk about your experiences. And I know that that's something right there that one will hit people, because obviously you can feel emotions through conversation. So I know this is going to be a great conversation moving forward. So I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. I think that's one thing we try to do every day, even though I'm getting up there in my years, try to bring energy every day. And really, even from my older days, when I first got started back at Illinois State, those guys always took care of me as young guys and as a young guy. And so the game is, we were talking on before we got on, Coach Major's over across the pond, so to speak, and the game's been very good to all of us, to me in particular. Oh, and so I want to always try to give back and help other people, young coaches, current coaches, just give back to the game as much as we can. So I appreciate the kind words before we even start, Doug.
Yeah. Now, well, before we start, Denzel Washington had a great quote about his arc of his career. And he said, you know, when I was young, I wanted to learn. In my middle years, I wanted to learn or earn. And then when I got older, now he's 70 something, I want to return. So it was learn, earn, and then return.
Love it.
And so you're in that mode now, as I know you're going to have a lot to return to the game. So that's why we're so excited to have you on. We're looking forward to this.
Well, Coach, one thing that stands out about your career is, just kind of diving right into it, is you've continually earned opportunities at the next level, the next opportunity. That's the one thing that I feel like a lot of people either can resonate with or want to be able to resonate with in the future. You know, getting experiences at the community colleges, junior colleges, Division II, Division I, and moving up and getting those next opportunities to now then branching out to being a head coach, longtime head coach at one university, which is, again, something that not a lot of people can say. There's people who have a lot of success and they end up moving to the next opportunity, and you've been at one spot for some time now, which is definitely a feather to your cap and shows a lot about who you are. But we want to go back, as we typically do, to the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Central Arkansas, junior colleges, one of the first positions that you had. The biggest adjustment, or I should say, what was the biggest adjustment kind of going from the junior college level to then going to either a Division II, Division III, Division I, like any other level from there? But like, did you see from the junior college side, was it any different? Did it teach you anything different from other experiences that you may have seen?
Sure. Doug, I actually got my start at Illinois State University and was a student assistant there with Coach Bob Bender. He was on Duke's staff back in the late 80s and early 90s, or late 80s. And so I was fortunate to be a part of his last 2 years at Illinois State. And we were actually part of two Valley championships, which was incredible to see as a young guy. Very thankful for that. And from there, needed to get some recruiting experience, went to Lincoln College, which was a junior college back in the day. Then they went NAIA and have since, like some university have had to do, has since closed. But was there with a Hall of Fame coach, Joe O'Brien, who won three national championships at Southeastern Iowa. And then from there, I went to started my Division I journey and was a Division I coach for 24 years, stopping at Texas State for five seasons, Kansas State with Jim Woldridge for six, the University of Utah for one season, and then the University of Evansville for 8 years before I came to Henderson for now. This will be the start of my 12th. So you mentioned about just sort of moving up and just the journey that I've had. You know, the thing that I've been really, really, really lucky, and to know just luck, honestly, is I've been to be four different schools for over 30 years. And that's been a really incredible thing. Texas State for five, which was great for me as a young guy working for a guy named Mike Miller. I'm getting to know Jim Woldridge because he was a tremendously successful coach there. That was Mike's boss. And then going to K-State for 6 years and then working at in the Valley for eight and winning the last year I was there sort of culminated in winning a postseason tournament and then getting a head coaching opportunity being here for 11. So I think the longevity of being at places for a long period of time and very, very fortunate, because I think this business can move people, you know, and you can be here two years there and maybe don't get some roots down. And we've been pretty fortunate, my family and I, to have really, really good roots with really, really good people at some really, really good universities, for sure.
No, I love that. What do you think for yourself has helped you as you progressed? And I guess let me ask you this. I'll rephrase that. At what point did you feel that you could become a head coach? Because I think that's something every coach that wants to be one.
Sure.
There's guys that think about being one. But then there's that moment where you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, like, do I really want to give it a shot?
For sure.
And when was that for you? And again, maybe it wasn't a particular year where it hit you. Sometimes it's gradual. You know, you kind of grow into it. But when did you start to think like, hey, I think I could be a head coach someday? Or did somebody share that confidence in you before you saw it in yourself?
I think I always knew I wanted to coach, right? I knew I wanted to be a Division I basketball coach. That was my goal, even going back to being a young guy playing basketball and even in junior high and early on in high school, I knew I wanted to be a Division I basketball coach. As a young coach, one of the things that I knew, but I don't know if I would have lived by, but I know this has really been beneficial to my career, is whenever I moved or whenever I took a new position, I took it because of the people. The guy that I was working for and everything's a trickle down effect from there. If you work for a good man, that's going to teach you. They're going to have other good men surrounded you on the staff. They're going to recruit good. You got to have talent. Like that goes without saying. You got to have good players. But I think I've been really fortunate. And I mentioned some of those places, Coach Bender, come on, man. Like he was incredible. And he had unbelievable people surrounding him. Joe Bryan the same way, Mike Miller, and the guys that I still stay in contact with and really good players when we were at Texas State, Jim Woldridge at Kansas State, and then Marty Simmons at Evansville. I've always been surrounded by good people, and the bosses that I've worked for have been incredible as far as empowering me, Coach Major. So it was really good. Those guys would, I wasn't in charge of the offense or the defense, sort of like things are now. And I'm not critiquing, that's just how things go now. Or we weren't in charge of just junior college or just high schools. Yeah. We did everything. I was a basketball coach. I had to do everything. And it's like, it's like I do here at Henderson. And so being with good people and then those guys empowering me, I was empowered at a young age at Texas State. Man, we had tons of responsibilities. We were held accountable. We learned. And so I think I knew I always wanted to be a head coach. I really got the I'm just old school, where, you know, water the grass where you're standing and serve the head coach that gave you your opportunity at that school. And so I was never really good at the self-promotion game, I think, that is really part of our part of this generation, which is necessary in order to keep moving. I just have looked, kept my eyes on serving, doing exactly what my head coach needed me to do. But Alan, to your question, I think I knew I really was ready to be a head coach towards the tail end of my time at Evansville, because I'd been an assistant at the Division I level for, you know, nearly 25 years. I loved this that we did at this school, but I don't know if I would do that as a head coach. Or I really loved the player development piece. I loved the booster engagement that I learned from Coach Wooldridge or whatever. I was ready to implement that in my own program, and I knew I could do it. And I felt like I was really ready to go towards my end of my time with Coach at Evansville. And fortunate, interviewed for multiple Division I opportunities, head coaching positions, and never had the deep NCAA tournament run or the, you know, the Final Four appearance that made it sexy to hire me. I decided to drop down to the Division II level and actually was offered a couple different positions that I didn't feel quite good about until I found Henderson. And I found this place, and I could talk all day about this place. Just the gentleman that hired me, Sean Jones, he's the deputy AD at Southern Mississippi, and just, you know, his passion for this place, how he turned me loose to run the program that I saw fit, you know, in a positive, developmental, servant kind of mindset with everything that we do. And so, that's sort of been my journey, and it's been pretty consistent that I've been very lucky to be surrounded by good people, you know, along the way.
Those stops you take too. Like, I feel like every stop you will learn, at least this was some great advice that I was given. It was actually from my mom when I was a grad assistant. She said, take what you're doing right now. After the first year, I was like, I don't know if necessarily, like, there was some up and downs as to if I was going to stay, and just kind of my mindset and like kind of wondering what's going on. She goes, take what you've learned, whether it's good or bad, take a piece or two from each coach that you have worked or played for, coached under, whatever, take a piece of them. What do you like about them? Write it down. What don't you like about them that you'd say, okay, when I get my opportunity, this is what I'm going to change. Write that down. Now you know the pros of the person, the cons, and it doesn't necessarily mean that maybe it's not that the person has a con, but I think you all know what I mean, right? For sure. Not that the person, it's something that, okay, I don't like this necessarily as much. I would do it a little bit differently. Put those down, and then after you've had great experiences with different coaches, you have a list of things. These are all the things that I like. These are all the things that I did not like that I would change. You get your opportunity. Now, I want to say one thing real quick, too, is you said you were an assistant for 25 years. That stands out to me a ton, because I feel like everybody immediately is like, no, I'm ready right now. Tomorrow, I'd be ready for the head coaching position tomorrow. And I haven't even had the opportunity, but from talking from so many people, I know if I got a head coaching opportunity tomorrow, would I be ready? Maybe. But I don't think, years ago, I thought I was ready. Now I start to realize, like, I don't know. And you just highlighted it. I like that.
No, you can do it. I mean, you just got to, like you said, glean, you know, knowledge from the different men that are put in your life and learn the good and learn the things that maybe you do a little bit different. And I think that's a big thing too. That makes us who we are, and really in helping our players along their journey, just seeing what they do well and what they don't do well and pointing that out to them and encouraging them to grow. I think, you know, for my personal growth, for sure, studying the men that you're working for and you're gleaning knowledge from. But even I did something, I think 2 years ago, that was really useful to me. I'd been here the head coach for about 8 or 9 years, and I reached out to all my former players. I reached out, we have a group chat that we were pretty active in, even as recently as this weekend, probably over 30 different guys that we communicate with on a regular basis. And I asked them three questions about myself, because not only do you can learn from other people that you work for, you're learning all the time what they want, how to do it, how to communicate, et cetera. But sometimes as a head coach, you get going and maybe you don't become as self-aware or as blind spots that you may have in your profession. And I went back, we've been pretty fortunate here to win a lot more than what we've lost. And I asked the guys, I said, guys, there's three questions that I want to ask you. You know, what would be something basketball-wise that you felt, what would be three things basketball-wise that you learned while you're here at Henderson? Question two, what would be three things off the court that we did a good job of teaching you, you know, that sort of stick with you to this day? And then the most important question is, what do you wish I did better for you as your head coach? What could I have done to help you basketball wise or off the court wise? And it was really, really interesting. You know, you mentioned, Alan, just about learning from the guys that you work for, but also learning from your players. You know, you got to know what you do well with those guys, what you don't do well. You know, you think you might be emphasizing X, Y, and Z, but it's really A, B, and C. And I think learning from what your players retain, and now that they've left the program, what do they remember from all those different standpoints? And then, you know, what could I have done better? And so I think as a coach, players, we got to teach them, we got to help them, we got to rebound for them, we got to get them in the gym, we got to get them stronger, we got to make sure they graduate, et cetera. But I think as a coach, their feedback, and that's sometimes tough to do because one of those two guys might have left or didn't end on the best terms or thought they should be first team instead of second team all league and you didn't help them get there. And so learning from them what you've emphasized to help them grow as men and help them grow as players, I thought was a really good exercise that I did a couple years ago.
That's so good, man. Yeah, the best part about it is clearly you've impacted these guys beyond the floor, because no one is going to be interested in staying in touch with someone that they didn't feel had some type of impact on them. So there's beauty in what you just said, just the fact that you guys stay in touch. You took it a step further and used it for a mirror self-reflection exercise, but continuing to maintain those relationships and understanding that this thing is so much about impact. And for sure, again, we all want to win. We want to win as much as we can. But I've been over here with a former player. I'm in Greece right now, and I've been with him since last Monday. We have not talked about the single outcome of any game.
Right, exactly. I love it.
So that just goes to what you're saying, though, with your guys, right? Like, that's the point is – and you're through this chat and through staying in touch with your guys, man, like you're obviously you left something in their lives that's really special. And I think as coaches, we all have to try to aspire to that. I don't know if any of us ever completely arrive at being where we'd like to be at that, but that's what I believe what we should all aspire to. So I'm so glad you shared that with the people that are going to be listening to this. That's awesome.
You know, Doug, you mentioned when you do become a head coach, because you will someday, and all of your experiences that you've been around. And I think that's one of the things early on when I was looking to become a head coach is, okay, at the end of the day, what is this program that you're going to be in charge of for a small period of time? It's happened. You know, this is going to go by. This has gone by quick. Can't believe you've been here in Arkadelphia and in Arkansas for over a decade, but here we are. What do you want this program to be known for? What do you want? You're the caretaker of it for this period of time. What do you want to be known for? And based upon all these different experiences of what you've seen work and how you want to impact guys. And for us here, it's been pretty simple. We at a Division II school and even lower levels, junior college and NAI, like Coach Major said, you got to win games. And you got, like, I get it. Like, that's, we're all competitive. We're all wired to fight and compete and to get better. But the one thing that we really wanted to, you know, stick a tent pole in for us is every single player that's ever played for us here. So I've had 36 seniors, 36, every single one of these kids have gotten their degree. And that's been something that has been a tent pole. Now, I was one short, and he won't get mad that I'm sharing it with you, but we had an international guy. If you look at my bio over the program, we're 97%. We're not 100% because we had a big Serbian guy that came back this past spring. He had one class to get. And so now he's the 36th consecutive guy that has gotten their degree from Henderson. And that's been through intentionality and communicating that through recruiting, through the first meeting, you know, through everything. We're going to be successful academically because at this level, we've had pros too. Like, we've had over 20, like we have had good players, but to be a pro or to keep playing after college, that takes some luck. It takes some being healthy, but the academic piece never leaves. It never leaves you. And you can change the trajectory of your legacy, of your family, of your last name. And so that's been a really big thing that I think we hang our hat on here. And Doug discovering that. And that really goes back to Jim Cruz. and goes back to Marty Simmons at Evansville. So I think when we were there, something like 96 straight kids have gotten their degree from Evansville. I saw what that meant when I was an assistant to that program, to that university, and to those players moving forward. And so I wanted to carry that to our next spot. And while it's been, you know, difficult at times, I mentioned our big fella that came back to get his, it's been hard, but that's been a really center point of everything that we try to do, is make sure those guys are prepared academically and have that degree when they leave here. And that's not coaches speak. That's not, because in this day and age, right, we can get into the transactional part of things and we can get off different. And there's no question that it can fall into that. And I've been transactional sometimes during my career, but you know, the leadership part, the making sure that they're okay when they leave here, that they can get a job when they're done or go into coaching or whatever they want to do. I just, for me personally, and that's not everybody's top core value or, you know, top thing that they really want to hang their hat on. But for me, that's been important. And that's why I've stayed here so long, because I think that is integrated with what the university's beliefs are as well.
The academic portion is huge. I mean, to your point, like a lot of these guys may go on to play professionally, but a lot of them will not. And what are you doing after? And that's the one thing I've learned. And I was a culprit of it too. When I was in high school, I wasn't thinking about what I was going to be doing for a job after I graduated. I was thinking about playing basketball in college. I could care less about anything else. For right. Sure. And now looking and talking to these kids, I start to understand that more, because I was the person who went through it. And the educational side is such a selling piece. And I'm not even saying it just to sell it, but like, the families and the parents eat that up. That's what they want to hear, is where have these kids gone on, specifically the mothers, right? If we're just putting it all out there, that's what they, but I'm not even saying it again to just tell the mothers that you're going to have good education, because you better stand by your word and you better actually back it up. That's the one thing. And to your point, having all of your guys go on, 97% go on to graduate, that right there is a huge point that like, we take this seriously. This is something that's going to project you not only in basketball, but it's going to help you later on in life. And that right there is one of the biggest pieces to be able to sell to a family, to a kid. And again, the kid, a lot of times that goes over a kid's head, but until they actually start to understand it, you're like, oh, okay, now I get it. Like that, this is something that is pivotal.
It doesn't go over the head when, you know, and Coach Major knows this, and you know this too, Doug, when someone makes a mistake or talks during class or walks in late or misses a class, God forbid, right? The assistant coach or the strength coach or whoever is getting them up in the morning, and there's going to be some kind of repercussions. Well, here at Henderson, I tell them through the recruiting, listen, fellas, you're going to get your degree. And that's how, this is the temple. This is the most important thing. And when you walk in late, or I'm going to find out when you're late or you miss a class, the assistants are not getting you up at 5 a.m. and running you. I am, because I want you to know, as the head coach, I care about this. So you're going to get my big tail out on the track in the morning with me and run a ready mile or whatever. And so selling it or communicating that, but then actually living it. So when that alarm goes off 4:45 and they're out there running that mile in the dark, and I got my headlights on the bleachers so they don't trip real then when they're running.
You don't forget that one. You do not. And then you don't make that mistake again.
No, we don't have very many repeat offenders, especially because the head coach is out there. And I'm not yelling and screaming or going nuts. It's just the fact they just, man, I got Coach E out there, man. Golly, man. It's not the assistant like when I was doing it. You got the big head coach out there.
No, you know what, Coach, though? It's two things in a sense that got me thinking about this. You know, the conversation is always the ABC. You know, people say academics, basketball, character. Coaches are looking for it. Should almost be CAB. Because if you look for high character, then typically academics is going to follow that. And the character and the academics are at the bottom of the triangle. And then those two are going to uphold the basketball piece.
For sure.
So if you find character, typically you're going to find academics with that. And then the basketball part will take care of itself, because the character and the academic piece are at the bottom as anchors holding the basketball stuff up. And you're trying to, kids don't get it as freshmen. They don't get it during the recruiting talk on the visit. Eventually, at some point, it clicks, you hope. You're saying, I want you to get an education. It's not just about just getting a degree and like finishing out and like tipping your hat, you know, cap and gown, throwing the deal in the air because you got a degree. Like, is a big difference between getting a degree and getting an education. and then helping them figure out something that's going to light them up for the next 30 years that they can be excited about, as opposed to like, oh, I got my degree and I'm done and I completed my credits and I stayed eligible. Okay, that's great. Now what? Versus getting education. And I think that's, to me, where the distinction lies. And however we can relay that to players and families and making that the difference of like, yeah, we just don't want to get you through. You're literally like, this is the last stop before the real world, man. Failure's not an option. So we got to try to help you find something that's going to help sustain you when that ball stops bouncing. Some of you, it's bouncing after, it's going to stop after senior day.
For sure.
And then other guys, hopefully more down the line. But that degree versus education thing, it always felt is like a big deal of making them understand that.
And Coach Major, you totally hit the nail on the head. The character piece comes before the academic piece, and it's got to start with me, right? It's got to start here, but then it also has to start with your assistant coaches. And this is the Rising Coaches podcast. And so a lot of assistants could be listening to this, and you know, who you are to those players is everything, because head coach is only around so much and you got to have good character. And I've been so lucky. I mean, I think I've had 7 guys leave here as my assistants or GAs that have gone on to the Division I level. Omar Morgan worked for me for 2 years at Tennessee. Sean Mock is the offensive coordinator, one of the top assistants for Coach Hardaway at Memphis. Mark Rutledge just got hired. He was a head coach in our conference. He was with me for 4 years, and now he's at South Alabama with Richie Riley. DJ Ballantyne was with me for a year, and now he's back up at Evansville. Numerous guys have gone on to other different programs, and not only are they – their character helped us win here and helped our guys graduate, and it trickled down to the guys. But then being good men, hardworking men, following the core values that I think are really important to our basketball program. We have 3. Following those 3 core values, you can do that when you're a guy of character. And so we've had a ton of success here because we've had really good guys, you know, assistant coaches and graduate assistants that had good character. And yeah, it all trickled down from there to the guys, because the guys are their kids. I mean, when I was 18, 19, 20, 20, come on, man, like I was a knucklehead. And if you have some good people that are showing you, no, okay, don't do that. Got to try to do this. And no one's ever going to be perfect, but we've had really good luck with good staffs and good men that have not only helped us win here, but have gone on to other places and have won their tails off and have been really productive at the higher level. And it all goes back. It's not, they have been good men before they got here, and then we helped them grow, and then they're even better coaches when they leave here. And so I'm really proud of that we've been able to identify. I think I've got 2 superstars here right now that are incredible guys that are going to help our players grow. Like you said, starts with character, but then grow academically, which is non-negotiable, then grow on the court as well.
First, I want to make sure to give a shout out to Mauro Morgan for being able to hook us up. I know he was the one who was fortunate that we were able to connect through him. But secondly, I want to go back. You mentioned the 3 core values. Would you care sharing what the core values are that you guys typically hold?
Sure. I stole them, man. I know. I think Coach Bennett, who's been really good to me in my life, you know, he's got, I think, 5. I can't remember 5 or 10. Some guys have 10 core value. You know, I got 3 what we can remember, but everything, all of our day-to-day operations. And I think Coach Cruz, Jim Cruz, you know, longtime Indiana assistant and head coach at Evansville, tremendous amount of success. I think 5 NCAA tournaments or 3 or 4. I mean, just something incredible, and did a great job for Coach Majerus, you know, at St. Louis. But in a nutshell, 3 of them are working hard, working tremendously hard, everything that you do. Caring about others, that's the second one. You got to care. You know, we mentioned walking in late to a class, you know, that shows your teacher that you don't really care enough about her or him. They're teaching history, and as excited we are about basketball, they're about history. You all have heard that before, and that's showing you care about them, and you got to care about your teammates. And I think that allows us to have a real servanthood mentality and a sacrificial component within our program, you know, when you care about other people. And then the third thing I think is really lost from coaching perspective as well as players is we try to listen well, try to be a great listener. When they come in here, great eye contact, put your phone down. I'll do the same. If I happen to be on my computer watching tape, shut the computer. I got to do that or I'll glance off, but we listen well to one another. We got to listen. so many of these players have things that we can help them with off the court, real life things, like real deep things. And I don't know about those unless I ask questions and listen. And that's something that I got to keep growing at, keep getting better at. But yeah, working, caring, and listening, those are the three core values that we really, really do a good job of every day. Like, we work. I think Coach Sampson has said this, you know, there's two people that can't have a bad practice, your point guard and your head coach. And I couldn't agree more with that. Like, I can never come in there and not work my tail off. And it starts with me. So working hard, showing you care about one another and living it, getting up in the morning, I care. So I'm going to be on that track with you because I care. And then listening, coach, I didn't show up because I'm having a problem with the anniversary of this tragedy in my life. I got to listen. I got to write that down. I got to make sure that I'm helping those guys. And so, yeah, working, caring, and listening are critical to everything that we do. And don't have a bunch of rules as far as, you know, X, Y, or Z, but definitely everything flows from those three things that we do. And it's not just poster boards and our stuff we put on a t-shirt. It's something that we, as a head coach and as assistant coaches, I ask those guys to really monitor and not monitor, but exemplify and try to lead by example.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah, what, you know, the word culture gets so beat up. It really does, because it's the most underspoken, overspoken, and underlived thing at times, right? It's overspoken and over, but it's underlived. And there was a great clip on Instagram. Hartenstein for OKC was talking about when Sam Presti came to Eugene, Oregon in the offseason to try to get him to come from the Knicks to OKC. And he said, you know, we sat down, we started talking, and Sam Presti didn't promise me minutes. He said, I can't promise you minutes. I can't promise you. I don't know what your role exactly is going to be in terms of starting, not starting, all that. I can't promise you points, rebounds, shot attempts. He said, the one thing I can promise you is a culture. And Hartenstein said, now that I've been here, everything that I thought it was from the outside is exactly what I thought it was. And he said, because the building is just so full of good people that it makes it easy to come in and just focus on basketball. Because, and basically saying, like, there's not all these other exterior things that you're trying to deal with. I'm sure they have their own fires, but their fires probably don't get to too many third degree burns. So it was just really cool how he described OKC's culture without really getting into the nuts and bolts of it. But that's what he said Sam Presti shared with him. So I love that you shared that, because I think when you do want to be a head coach, it's not so much your system that's important that you want to get across to your guys and the school and the community and your philosophy and X's and O's. It's what values do you want the program to stand on? And that's what's so cool about what you shared, man. It's like, that's what this program is standing on, that right there. And if you can get your arms and everything around those things as a program, a team, players, coaches, now we can figure out all the X's and O's.
Right.
We want to run, we want to press, we want to trap, you want to do whatever you want to do. You can do whatever you want to do after that, if the stuff you mentioned is watertight.
For sure. You know, I think, coach, to piggyback on that, I think there's two overused words, right? Like, I always hear, you know, the culture, and I'm more of a, okay, I understand culture, but how do you define it? And then how do you get your guys to live it? And I think we try to do a really good job of that. How do you get it in the fibers of the players' hearts and minds? How do you integrate it into them? And I think we do some really specific, tangible things that have been really good for us. I can share those with you. But I think the other thing is the process. You know, everyone says, hey, stick with the process, stick with the process. And I was challenged probably right when I got here, probably about 10 years ago. Okay, people say that. What is your process? And then how do you do, it's whatever today is. It's June, you know, 21st. Where are you at in the process? Can you define it? More importantly, can your players articulate what the Henderson or what your basketball program's process is? And that was challenging. That was really good. I added to our process last year, but I think being able to figure out the how, can you define your process? okay, we all want a good environment. We all know how that looks like, but how do you do it? You know, how do you, that's the magic sauce, right? That's the secret sauce.
No doubt.
That's the magic, is 100%. How do you get it into your guys?
100%. Sure. Yeah.
Well, and
go ahead though. Yeah.
I was going to say, going back to what you said in the beginning too, is the best practice is to improve yourself. So like ultimately the way that you act on a day-to-day basis, as you said, if your head coach is saying, hey, we need you to be showing up early and doing this and doing that, and then you show up 5 minutes later, it's like you're not instilling the right things. You got to be able to practice what you preach, and it starts with looking in the mirror and being able to hold accountable yourself, which then 100%. Allows you to hold accountable everybody else. Because if you're telling people to do something and then you're not doing it yourself, or hey, make sure you get to sleep tonight before the game, and then somebody's parent sees you out hanging out 100%. At a local place around the corner, like that word spreads. And they're like, oh, well, coach isn't even saying what he's doing. So why is he holding us to it? It's like it all starts with yourself and then trickles down, which is crazy to me, but it's not crazy. But it's just like it's weird to think about how your self-reflection can involve so many different people in a program.
Lifelong learner. Like you're always learning to improve yourself. And then it trickles down to your staff. You know, do you have guys that are – I'm not a video game guy. You have guys on social media, or do you have guys on their phone all night long or playing a video game all night long? Or are they actually showing the players how to work, how to prepare, how to study base out of bounds, unders, and side out of bounds, special situations? Do you know what you're going into a game getting ready to go against because your staff is working and your staff? And that's where I love my guys here, because they have tried to be, you know, leaders by example, you know, not only vocal leaders. Easy to be a vocal leader, but if you don't have any character, they're not going to follow you. They're not going to follow you. You got to be a man of example. And that's where I've been really, really fortunate with those guys that I've had here to help implement our environment around here, as well as to stay with our process and to be able to articulate that and have our guys improve within our process to become a great player.
Yeah. I know.
Especially
you said, go ahead.
I was just gonna say when they come up to you in a practice and ask you a question, you have that answer. Hey, how do they break this? And you say something, and then later on in film, your coach says, no, they do it this way. And then they're like, well, he told me this.
For sure.
You know, like you gotta make sure you know what you're talking about. If you don't know what you're talking about, take a step back, be like, I don't know. Let me get that answer. Go
for
ahead.
Sure. Dave. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, for sure, Doug. Like sometimes you don't know.
It is.
Hey, I don't know. Uh-huh. Let me get back to you. But then get back with them. You know, hey,
absolutely.
Coach, I thought that guy was an in and out cross, and you're telling me that he's just keeping the ball in his right hand in and out and shooting it. You know what? Let me double check that. You could be onto something right there. And I think holding ourselves accountable as coaches, assistant coaches or head coaches, is critical. And then if you don't know, it's okay to not know, like 100%, and get back with them and figure it out.
Yeah. That's so true, man. No, it young coaches, if you focus on, I think it's really being able to communicate. I think is, if there's one thing, if young coaches could put a circle around, is being able to communicate, because that's going to travel all through the building, whether it's your immediate team, players, staff, exterior support people on campus, especially on campuses like, you know, yours, where you got to be out. You know, like you got to be across campus dealing with housing.
For sure.
And then you got to be over here talking to financial aid. Like, so the ability to communicate is a big deal for young coaches. But then it's the second one's competency. And you may not, whatever your level is of competency as a young coach, consistently trying to grow that. But then when you're dealing with players, just keeping it, staying in your lane and doing it. So now players can understand, all right, to the level that his role is, this guy really is good in terms of what he's talking about.
One of my good friends.
Can you make him better? So 100%. Can you communicate? Can you show him that you know what you're talking about, like Doug just said, and admit it when you don't? And then like being able to make him better. Like, can you help me improve? And I think those are three things young coaches could really stick a flag in the ground and work sure. around.
My first few years at Evansville, worked with the new Orlando Magic head coach, Sean Sweeney. He's a good friend of mine. And Coach Sweeney's with the Magic. And one of the things that is constantly coming out of his camp, constantly coming out of the Magic, or he was with the Spurs or with the Mavericks or wherever, is he's an elite communicator. He coached when he was in Milwaukee with Coach Kidd, and when he was in Dallas with Luka and Giannis. And now you know, the big guy at San Antonio, and I'm moving to Orlando. They say there's two things about him, that he's an elite communicator and he tells them the truth. He's a truth teller. He's not a fluff garbage, you know, him and Haw. He's a truth teller, and he does it in a way those guys know he's really competent. And I think that's huge, coach, you know, telling players the truth. They might not like it. Do it in a way that you don't have to denigrate them, you know, disregard them, disrespect them. You don't have to do any of that. Do it by telling them the truth, being forceful, and having the competence. Okay, this is what you're doing. I can help you get better. And I think being an elite communicator is incredible. And also telling the truth, you know, being direct and having the acumen to do that. I think that's two things, you know, as a young coach, you know, maybe I could share this as well, because we can have our eyes on NIL, even at high school now. You can have your eyes on the transfer portal. You can have your eyes on the transactional nature of everything that this game is becoming right now. And that's part of it. You have to be able to negotiate the transfer portal. You have to be able to recruit. You have to be able to generate some energy. That's the world we live in. So you can't complain about it. You have to, and the players should be getting compensated. That's a whole different discussion. But I've had a lot of this talk, Coach Major and Doug. I think you guys would resonate with this. How do you get through that? How do you, in the midst of all this change, in the midst of where our game's at? And for me personally, what I've done is I've identified two things that I think I am and do, and stick to those no matter what. And so even if we had a freshman of the year 2 years ago, Rondae Hill, he's a really, really good player. Freshman of the year in our league, gets blown up when the portal opens, decides to go to Division I school, wasn't quite what he thought based upon our conversations, and gets back in the portal. He's coming back home. He's coming to play for me. He's returning home this year for us. And I think that's the nature of the movement of our game. It is. And the two things that I just try to always do every day is, I think because of the men that I've been around, I'm a good basketball coach. And I don't care if I have them for 1 year, 2 years, 4 years. I've got to teach the game and try to teach the fundamentals and the habits of basketball as best as I can with those guys. Be a good basketball coach. No matter how many years you got them, be a good basketball coach. And the number two thing that I really take pride in is as a relationship builder, as a relationship developer, and develop relationships with them. The second thing that I try to do is be an elite relationship builder, relationship guy. And that's off the court, is build a relationship with these guys. And I can't get jaded if that relationship only lasts a year because of an opportunity for this young man to leave and to grow, and maybe earn some money for his family. You know, who am I to judge that? I can't control that. What I can control is, did I get him better as a player? Did I use my basketball knowledge to try to be a good coach to him? And was I a good relationship? Was I close with him? Did I challenge him? Did we get close? Build relationship and be as best coach as I can. And when you just sort of focus on that, for me, it helps me, because you can get really disappointed. You know, we don't have NIL flying off the shelf here. We don't have that. We have challenges like a lot of people do. And so it can get really discouraging and frustrating, not if you don't know your identity. And I think that's so important for young coaches, is really figure out who you are and live it. And it's okay if that puts you at the same spot for a number of years, and you had plans to get to the Big 12 or go to the Pac-12. Okay, keep doing the things that make you individual who you are. And for me, I take pride in being as good a basketball coach as I can, and then be a relationship guy, build relationships with these guys from now and for the rest of their life. And some guys don't want it for the rest of their life. Some guys don't, but that's their decision. That's not mine. I'm going to be there for them. I'm going to be with them, just like Coach Major is doing in Greece right now. So yeah, be as good a basketball coach as you possibly can and develop a relationship as best as you can.
Solid, man. That's solid gold.
That was going to say that encompasses the best way to be not only the best coach for yourself, but the best coach for your players. And especially in today's era, like, I feel like a lot of people can get hung up in the, if you're fortunate to be able to have the NIL and the financial side of things, and a lot of people can get caught up in that side, and this is what I can offer you, rather than being a genuine person. And that's why, I mean, and my guess here is that's why you've been so fortunate to be able to stick around at a program for so long, because people can see that not only are you building a basketball program, but you're building a family, you're building a culture, you're building something bigger than that. And that speaks volumes, especially for one of your guys to be able to come back too. It says enough right there.
Oh, gosh.
That's been good. You know, yeah, we've had, like, I've been lucky. I'm going to brag on this too, a humble brag.
Yeah, please.
Two of my former players asked me to officiate their wedding. And that's been, you know, that's probably been two of the biggest highlights. We've won championships and all that kind of stuff. But to be able to walk one of your former players into, you know, to date their biggest day of their life and to help them do that has been an honor to do for a couple of my guys. And so, yeah, that's as good as any cutting down any net or grabbing any ring or anything that you possibly can. It's just knowing that you're a small part of those guys' life and future as you move forward. Because Doug and Alan, you guys know, none of us are going to get very few of us are going to get super rich. And I tell my guys this all the time. You know, very few of you are going to maybe make millions of dollars playing professionally. Very few coaches make millions of dollars. We see all those guys on ESPN every night and Fox and all that stuff. But I learned this lesson. You mentioned your mother earlier, Doug, and my mother taught me this. You know, you can be rich in so many different things. You can be rich in money, and we all need money. Like, I get it. You can be rich in money. Or she was the richest woman in the world in regards to her spirituality. She was rich beyond measure. I'm rich in relationship. You can be rich in relationship. Kids get their degree. You can be rich in your wisdom. You can be rich in your health. You guys are rich in your time. One guy's in Greece. The other guy's, you know, organizing an unbelievable podcast. I mean, come on. You guys are wealthy in your time. And so having that focus of, okay, it's not necessarily all about money or wealth or prestige or power, although you can be rich in those things. And that's why I get worried a little bit about today's generation and today's game. You know, like, are they going to be rich in relationship in 10 years? Or have they been to four schools in 4 years and they made a little bit of money, but now that's gone? Where are they going to be rich in? And you hope that, you know, there's so many different things that you can be rich in the immediate's money, because we all need it. We all don't have it and we need to get it. You know, like, that's how we think.
Right.
There's a lot of other things that you can be rich in. And I try to help our guys and coaches sort of see that other part of it as best as they can. That's so hard to do, but that's something that I've learned along the way too.
No, I'm so glad you said that. And especially for coaches, because coaches have that's in our game right now. Is, again, we love ambition, but if ambition becomes an obsession over being great where you are, then now that's an issue. That's a challenge. But the thing as we continue to beat this drum, I love where we are, is that, you know, I was flying over here and I went from JFK to Athens. And there was a point, you know, where it got a little bumpy as we're leaving JFK. So what's the first thing we do on a plane? You know, whenever something's get a little shake, you kind of put your hands on the armrest a little bit, brace yourself, right? So that's why they call it turbulence, because things are shaky. And never in our sport has our game been more turbulent than it is right now. You don't know if the way that you run your program and the environment that you set up and the way you talk to your players and the way you help them and the way you try to help them be consistent and the way you try to get them to grow as men and the way you'd like them to sit together and at a meal and not be on their phones and enjoy hanging with each other and the way that the coaches deal with the players, all that, you never know if that's the one thing these guys may have in their lives to hold on to, is this team environment. On what the other parts of their lives look like. And we try to figure that out sometimes, but they're only going to tell us as much as they're comfortable with far as that. But what we have and what you have in your building and what Doug has there at Chatham, that might be the only thing that they have to hold on to in a turbulent world. And that's why we can't take this for granted in terms of how we operate. Just on that, this is just day to day. This has nothing to do with winning. This is just day to day, like how they treat each other, how we live together, all that. You know,
I'll try to Doug's
creating something that they can hold on to is a big deal. And they may have other things to hold on to, but why not your program as well? That could be something else.
For sure. I'll never forget this. I'll land the plane quick. I was a student assistant at Illinois State. I mentioned that earlier. So this would have been like 1993 or 1992. And Coach Tubby Smith would not know me or recognize me, former great Kentucky. I mean, come on, man. Hall of Famer. And I'll never forget. He was a coach at Tulsa. And it was one of those old school, Coach Mage, you might remember this. It was like the Missouri Valley game of the week, like at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, not many channels back then, you know, et cetera. And they had a guy named Shea Seals, coach. I mean, they had great players. Williamson, I mean, they were loaded. They were top 25, and we ended up beating them. And TV, it was a big win for our program, the guys, whatever. I'll never forget this. Arena empties out, and we were in a staff coaches meeting or something like that. And I was walking across the concourse. I'll never forget this. And there was one of our janitors was walking up the tunnel and had two big heavy bags of trash. No one was around. The Tulsa bus was at the top of the runway. I'll never forget this. And as I was walking, thinking about, oh man, how great win. And I see the bus up. I'm like, oh man, those guys are, man, they're probably getting yelled at. Holy cow. Like, what a bad loss. And Coach Smith, their locker room was a little higher up towards the bus. And he comes walking out. And instead of stomping his feet, kicking rocks, you know, punching the wall, whatever, he sees this janitor struggling with the trash. He doesn't see me behind him. I'm behind. I'm 50 yards behind. I see him grab. No, no, no. He grabs the trash from this janitor and goes behind his bus. They lift the dumpster lid. He puts it in there, shakes the guy's hand, and gets on the bus after losing a big. I'll never forget that. And I think the character, like what you guys have talked about, just what a program enables, how, you know, that's a responsibility as an assistant, as a student assistant, as a video coordinator, as the head coach for certain. I mean, that's we have the responsibility to try to exemplify what being a good man and a good coach and a good person is all about. I don't forget that. I mean, that was a long time ago with a Hall of Fame coach who could, in my head, should have been so angry, but he took time to do the right thing. And those kinds of stories, those kinds of things just always sit with me. And if we can just have maybe a similar experience, story, or living life with your guys, and maybe they'll learn some things just like I saw on that day.
Oh my gosh. I got goosebumps over here, man. That's unreal. That's amazing.
That's why he's one, right? That's why he's a Hall of Fame guy, man.
Yeah.
100%.
And I don't want to act like I know him. I don't know Coach. Like, Coach would walk by, like, who's that guy? Like, but
right.
I remember that forever, man.
Oh, wow.
Well, and that's the thing is you do little things like that and you never know who's watching and you never know how, not even necessarily doing it in that aspect of somebody's watching to be able to see you do it, but you never know when somebody is, to your point. You were standing behind him. He had no clue. He sees that. And that's something that you hold on to for a while. And he probably doesn't even know that you have any idea of you watching that. And it means so much to you. There's so many times like that in this world as a coach, as an individual, as a player, whatever it might be, that you have those types of moments where you do something and you're like, you don't know how it really actually impacted somebody on the greater side.
Yeah, for sure.
So that right
there. I'll tell you one guy that's never forgotten, that maintenance man.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I guarantee you that guy.
He probably became a fan of the school. He probably liked that more.
Exactly. That guy has never forgotten it. I can promise you that.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you just don't know, man.
He would have showed up the next day at work with the other team's shirt on.
Right. Tulsa gear. Yeah.
Not in Redbird country, man. No, no, no.
He appreciated
the help, right. But in Illinois, no. Right.
No, I know, country, I know. Well,
Coach, it's been so good, man. So good, Coach.
Long time ago.
So good.
Wow. Well, first off, thank you, as we all, I mean, typically like to say, I mean, just for being able to take some of your time to be able to hop on here, thank you very much. But not only that, to share and exemplify all the stories that you have, and it, to sum it all up, basically, it starts with the man up top, and you are the man up top, and there's a reason why you've had so much success, why the program has had so much success, because you're exemplifying everything that you're saying, at least from what it sounds, and you know, and the stories that we're hearing and the conversation that we have. And like I said, even before we hopped on here, I knew you could tell you were a genuine person because of the things that you were, just the way you were portraying yourself. So there's a reason why the success has been speaking volumes. And thank you for being able to share that and limelight that with everybody else.
No, I appreciate you guys, Alan, Doug. You guys are awesome. Keep helping people. You guys are doing an incredible job listening to all those podcasts. That's the truth. You know, sowing seeds to young guys, and you might just reach that one guy with that one guest that really helps catapult them in their career. So what you guys are doing is so much value to it. You might not know it or see it now, but just like Coach Smith did for me when I was a young cat, you don't know who you're impacting and the time and all the work that you guys are doing to help grow our game and help establish, you know, the roots of our game and keep growing them is just incredible. So thanks to you guys for doing everything you can to help continue to grow it with the right guys as we move forward. Really appreciate you guys.
No, Coach, that means a lot, man. It really does. I mean, we actually, Doug got a text from a coach, and no need to mention his name, but, and he forwarded it, Doug forwarded it to me, and guy was expressing a lot of gratitude for the pod, and we don't need 10,000, yeah. We don't, but we just need one person to tell us that, and that's enough for us, because now that just inspires us to keep trying to grow this game. And if we can grow this game, improve the profession one coach at a time. And the guy that texted us was going through a particularly tough time in his career. Doug, I know you know who I'm talking about because you sent it to me. And so that we just need one of those every now and then. We don't need them every day. I don't care if it's once every 6 months, but you know, we get one of those every now and then. And that just keeps us going to keep bringing good people on like yourself, because that's what this thing is about. Just bringing good people that are going to raise the profession. That's what rising coaches means to us. Not rising fast, top 150 coach in the country. None of that ranking stuff. This is more about raising the game and raising the profession. From all the way in Greece, thank you, Coach. We got better today, so we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Coach. And to everybody, thank you all for tuning in. That does it, another episode, the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, keep working and keep rising coaches. See you all soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
Still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.